descendants of King Ikshvaku. These are all the descendants of Vaivaswatamanu. So one of his sons was Ikshvaku. So this is his dynasty. So it's going through a lot of different names here, and once in a while something interesting about the different people comes up, and that's mentioned. One thing I noted, I don't know the significance of it, but a lot of these names in this dynasty end with Ashwa, and Ashwa means horse. So apparently they were fond of horses. I don't know. Kuvalayashwa. So Kuvalayashwa, he comes along and the line that's being discussed here. So then it says, this is back in text 22, to satisfy the sage Utanka, the greatly powerful Kuvalayashwa killed a demon named Duntu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. So this is the first thing that was interesting. He's got 21,000 sons, this Dundu. Now, we're fortunate we don't have to trace all those 21,000 lines, because you'll hear what happens next. O Maharaj Parikshit, for this reason, Kuvalayashwa is celebrated as Dundu Mara, the killer of Dundu. So there's a demon, his name is Dundu. And Kuvalayashwa killed him with the help of his sons. But all but three of his sons, however, were burnt to ashes by the fire emanating from Dundu's mouth. So he had 21,000 sons, and they all fought against this demon, but this demon was so powerful with fire, like a dragon breathing from his mouth, he killed all but three of the sons. So this is one of those examples where you lose the battle and win the war. He lost all of his sons except three of them out of 21,000. So suffered pretty heavy casualties. The remaining sons were Dhridashva, Kapilashva, and Brihadashva. Then he had a son named Hariashva and a son named Nikumba. So then it traces down a few more generations. Then we get to Yuvanashva, who we're hearing about now, that we just heard on Friday, how Yuvanashva, he had 100 wives, but he had no children. So we hear this often for some reason. It seems to be the start of different leelas, where none of the wives can conceive. Chitraketu had, I always forget the number, whether it's 10,000 or 10 million or whatever it was. Only 10 million, yeah. So he had 10 million wives. He still couldn't have a child. Until he got the blessings of the sadhu. So here again, they went to the forest. They took vanaprastha. They said, well, we're not going to have any children. But somehow when they went to the forest, they're supposed to be retiring, but they didn't lose the desire, apparently. They still wanted to have a child, he and his 100 wives. So they went to the sages for help. And the sages have a lot of power. They are able to create something. Here the word used was mantrajala. Mantrajala means water. Mantrajalam means the water had been blessed, just like we call the sacred rivers. So we assume something's happening, but we know these very powerful sages, they could actually do amazing things just with the power of mantra. There are several different stories in the Bhagavatam of wives wanting a child and sacrifice being performed. Sometimes what they eat is called payash, which is, that's a name sometimes used for sweet rice also, or kheer. So that preparation is somehow fortified by the power of mantra. And because of that water, here in this case it was water that was had some kind of shakti in it, given to it by a power. Through mantra, it was given such shakti that it was supposed to be taken by one of the wives, but the king, by providence, he said, I'm thirsty, I'm going to drink this. So he drank it and he got pregnant instead of the women. And so maybe he said, whoops. Should have controlled my thirst. So he Even the baby's laughing over here. So then we see here, so in this verse today, the baby was born from the lower right side of this Yuvanashva. So first of all, I want to say something about mantra. Of course, we have one mantra, the Maha Mantra. It's the Maha Mantra because these things seem like there's a lot of power. You just chant some mantras and cure infertility. Even can make a man have a child by the power of your mantra. So many examples in the Bhagavatam and other places of how people are made do amazing things with mantra. You can call up the Brahmastra weapon by mantra. In the battle of Kurukshetra and other battles, we see so many things happen as a result of mantra. The power of sound. So as we often face the idea that the people, they think this is all just made up stuff. This can't be possible. Just by chanting some words, you're going to be able to create something. But there are actually fairly recently some eyewitness accounts of people doing amazing things with sound. Devamrita Swami has written a nice book, Searching for Vedic India. So he covers a lot, lots of ground. It's a very long book. It's 600 pages. So he covers lots of things. And one of the things he talks about, mantra there. And in that section, he talks about how... Well, he talks about different anomalies that archaeologists and other scientists and so on can't figure out. For example, the pyramids. There's an idea that possibly the pyramids were built with mantra, because they can't explain it any other way. They try to explain it. Because what the pyramids, just like the Great Pyramid, the biggest one, it's built, for one thing, it's got the small stones on the bottom and the big ones on the top, which doesn't make any sense when you're building something. And then why would you build it that way, that you have to get these huge... Some of these rocks, stones, boulders, they're cut into cubes, rectangular cubes, whatever that's called. And they have to get them, way up to the top, 250 feet at the top of this. So they speculate that they built some huge ramps. But it would take as many rocks as there are in the pyramids just to build the ramps. And they say they probably just didn't have one ramp. They must have at least come from different directions. So some people think, well, maybe there were probably some gods, aliens who visited in former times and built these things. But another idea is that maybe they did it with rocks. And there's also incredible precision, the way they're put together. You're dealing, some of these rocks are as heavy as a locomotive. Just imagine a locomotive engine. How heavy, how do you move such a thing? So there were eyewitness reports from Tibet where Buddhist monks were able to people saw this. This was in the 20s and 30s. By hitting some kind of instrument, they were making music. And what they were trying to do is, these rocks weren't quite as big. They were like 3 by 3 by 4, which is already weighs, I don't know, a few tons at least. But they were raising them in the air 750 feet up to the cliffs where they were building something around there. Of course, it's all hilly there in Tibet. So people actually saw them doing these things. These things were just floating in the air, levitating, and all they were doing was playing, entering in kind of meditation and playing some instruments. So there are many things that go on in this world that are very difficult to explain. And, of course, in the Bhagavatam, we have explanations of amazing things. And we say, why not? There are amazing things happening today. There are amazing things that have happened throughout history. We don't always have explanations for them. But here's an explanation. Just by the power of mantra, this person was able to conceive a child, this man. So let's go on to the next verse. Kang dasyati kumaro yam stanyero Roruyate Brisham Mam Dhata Vatsa Marudhir Itindro Deshinamadat. The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the Brahmanas were very unhappy. They didn't like all this crying. They're trying to meditate or whatever they do. Who will take care of this baby, they said. Then Indra, who was worshipped in that yajna, yajna was meant to please Indra to have a child. He put his finger in the baby's mouth and said, "You may drink me." When I read this, I thought, drink me? You'd think it would say, drink from me or something. But actually it says in the Sanskrit, Mam Dhata. So, Dhata means take from or accept from, or what does it mean, Manumati? Dhata, exactly? Produce or something like that? Carry. Yeah. So then they take. Anyway, the idea is take. Take this for me. Take me, actually, is what it says. Mam Dhata. So you drink me, it says. You may drink me. Namamara pita tasya. Pita tasya. Vipra deva prasadataha. Yuvanashvota tatraiva tapasa siddhim anvagat. Because Yuvanashva, the baby, the father of the baby, was blessed by the brahmanas, he did not fall a victim to death. So this, I thought, well, why would he fall a victim to death? Well, duh, he had just produced a baby out of his side. There's probably a pretty big hole there. So I should assume that's what this is referring to, why this is mentioned, that he didn't fall victim to death. Because he was blessed by the brahmanas. Maybe they just touched him. We see this happening too sometimes in different battles. They just touch and they cure. Today this is a science fiction thing that happens. Just touch someone and it sews them up. Surgery by touching. So, or suturing by touching without the sutures. So they fixed him up somehow. He didn't fall victim to death. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection in that very spot. It doesn't say how much time took place, but he performed severe austerities and siddhim anvagat. He achieved perfection. So that's what happened to him. Now the son that was born, who was drinking from Indra's finger, his name was Mandata. This is the next verse. Trasadhasyur itindronga vidadhe nama yasya vai. Yasma trasanti hyudvigna dasyavo ravanadaya yovanashvota mandhata chakravarti avanim prabhu sapta dweep pavatim eka shasha sachuta tejasa. Mandhata, the son of Yuvanashva, was the cause of fear for Ravana and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikshit, because they feared him, the son of Yovanashva was known as Trasadhasyu. So Dasyu means thieves. So Trasadhasyu means one who threatens thieves and rogues. This name was given by King Indra by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The son of Yovanashva was so powerful that when he became emperor, he ruled the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, without any second ruler. So he was so powerful, so why was he powerful? Well, he's drinking Indra, just like Arjuna, how powerful he was. Because he has that Shakti. Indra is so powerful, he has a thunderbolt. He knocks off the tops of mountains. He defeats so many powerful asuras. So he's extremely powerful. And of course, he lives in a higher region, farther up in the universe, Bhubuvar Swa, Swargaloka. So he's extremely powerful. So he gave that potency to his son, Mandata. So it wasn't hard for his son to rule the 7 islands, wherever that is exactly. Actually, we were discussing before, the 7 islands seems to be what's ruled by Manu. So this is where the humans reside, in these 7 islands, Saptadweep. So the last 2 verses for today. Ije cha yagyam kratupir atmavid bhuri dakshinai sarva deva mayam devam sarvatmakam atindriyam dravyam mantro vidhir yagyo yajamanas tatartuja dharmodeshas chakalascha sarvam etad yaratmakam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priests, the result of the sacrifice, the arena of sacrifice, and the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandhata worshipped that transcendentally situated Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the brahmanas, and thus he performed yajna to worship the Lord. When all these descriptions of these lines, these are always the most important points, where these are all great devotees, or especially those who exemplify devotional service to the Lord, there we often get a few lines about them, these different devotees. So this is a particularly powerful devotee of the Lord, and he's, during his reign, of course he's ruling over everything as an emperor, so he's making sure that sacrifice is going on. So there's some interesting things here about the sacrifice. We often discuss how during Vedic sacrifice, everything has to be done exactly right. If you don't do things right, then you get a bad result. Sometimes you get the opposite of what you want to do. So there are different kinds of priests who make sure that things are... They have referee priests, Prabhupada even calls them that sometimes. So they have to make sure that the mantras are chanted exactly right. So everything has to be right. So here we see an example of these different things that have to be right when you perform the sacrifice. So many different ingredients or aspects of the yajna are there, and they have to be just exactly right, or things don't satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or you get some opposite result, especially if it's a fruitive sacrifice where you're trying to attain some particular thing. So in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says that he's all the different aspects of the sacrifice. And of course, the doer of the sacrifice, the mantras that are chanted, the result, all of those things are said to be Brahman. Brahman means spirit. They're transcendental. Or they're Krishna. Because they're all connected. When something becomes connected with Krishna, then it becomes spiritualized. Ordinary food offered to Krishna becomes spiritual food. It transforms us. When we eat it, we're not eating ordinary food. We're eating spirit. Reading Krishna. Lord Chaitanya ate prasadam, and he was thinking how this is the taste of Krishna. This is prasadam. So here we see different things. Of course, first of all, it said this nice phrase, sarva deva mayam. So the... what does it say here? Bhuri dakshina. By giving large contributions to the Brahmanas, sarva deva mayam, devam, sarva atmakam. So these are some of the qualities or characteristics of the Lord. Sarva atmakam, he's the Lord of everyone, or the soul of everyone. He's the soul of souls. But he makes up all the demigods. They have nothing without him. We're hearing about Indra's power, that he could accomplish this. And this mandata could rule over the world just because he got some milk from Indra's finger. But where does Indra get his power? He gets it from Lord Krishna. So sarva deva mayam, whatever the devas have, whatever potency they have, that's coming from him. So this mandata, he was intelligent enough to know that even though I got all this power from Indra, Indra's not getting the power alone. He's getting it from somewhere else. In that nice verse that Lord Brahma, about Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita, where it said it's just like a stone that picks up light during the day, and then at night it shines. So it's not shining with its own light, it's shining with the light that it's getting from the sun. Glow in the dark. So similarly, all the devas, whatever power they have, that's coming from Krishna. So he's going to worship that Supreme Personality of Godhead regularly and show that by his example. So then the different things are mentioned. Dravyam, the ingredients, mantra, the chanting of the hymns, vidhi, regulative principles. Vidhi, of course, means rules. So many rules have to be followed. Yajna, the actual worship itself, yajamana, the performer, that's the person who, the producer, you might say, the one who gets it all started. That's here in this case, that's the king. And then the different priests, ritvija, then dharma. So besides vidhi, there's also dharma, which is another kind of, here it's translated as religious principles. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration, and they all represent Krishna, even where it happens, desha, even the place where it happens, that becomes a tirtha. When you perform a sacrifice in any place, then it becomes a tirtha. That's why the great devotees, wherever they go, they create tirthas. They create holy places because they're always performing yajna. They're constantly performing yajna, performing sacrifice, sankirtan yajna, glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even the time also becomes spiritualized. Now, of course, generally performing these kinds of sacrifices, the time is calculated very exactly. Should do it at this particular time. But chanting Hare Krishna, that's why in the Shikshastakam, Lord Chaitanya says, you know, these rules and regulations, you don't have to worry about these when you chant Hare Krishna. When you perform Sankirtan Yajna, when you perform these other yajnas, you have to worry about all these other things. You have to make sure you get them right or you don't know what the result's going to be. But Sankirtan Yajna, you can do it anywhere, anytime, any place, with anyone. And it's always the right thing. And in fact, even in devotional service, we always add the chanting of the holy names. Just like Prabhupada, he did these fire, we do fire sacrifices. So what are our fire sacrifices compared to Vedic fire sacrifices? They're like a little girl playing on a play stove while her mother's cooking on the real stove. And we're doing these little sacrifices. Even the biggest ones we do, they're nothing compared to real Vedic sacrifices. We're trying to do something. Good Prabhupada liked it. There's something cultural about it. But what was the essence of it? The essence was mantra, really. And in what mantra? The Maha Mantra. He always say, now chant, everyone chant. Hare Krishna. And of course, in the early days, Prabhupada, when he would give initiations, when he would have fire sacrifices for initiations, he used to chant on all the beads there, sitting in front of the fire. So sometimes it would take some time. He would chant on all those beads. I was told by one devotee that he actually recorded Pratyatosh. He told me that he recorded Prabhupada chanting, and that's where the japa tape comes from. That's what he told me. So that's what used to go on during our fire sacrifices. What was it? Yajapi anya bhakti kalo kartavya tada kirtanakya bhakti samyogenaiva. This is from Jiva Goswami. He says that in Kali Yuga, you can do other kinds of devotional service. Yajapi anya bhakti kalo kartavya in Kali Yuga. Tada kirtanakya bhakti samyogenaiva. But the connection with Krishna, the perfection of it, or it becomes complete. Samyogenaiva becomes complete with the Maha Mantra. The Maha Mantra completes everything. So especially in this age, of course we do Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. And each of these we learn you can perfect any of these and become perfect yourself. But in Kali Yuga especially, the Sankirtan Yajna is required. It's part of everything that we do. It's the essence, it's the foundation of our spiritual practice. So again, and we're so fortunate, we don't have to worry about make sure everything is right before we start chanting Hare Krishna. The only thing we have to get right is our mood and our attitude. Then we chant Hare Krishna and we get the perfection of the sacrifice. So I'll just read the first verse again. Tata kala upavritte kukshim nirbidya dakshinam yuvanashvasya tanayash chakravarti jajanaha. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son with all the good symptoms of a powerful king came forth from the right lower side of King Yuvanashva's abdomen. That's where the appendix is, right? So any questions, comments? Yes. Well, I can't hear you. You're asking what happened? In Kali Yuga. We lose tirthas. Yeah, well, it said just like that there's a covering over it. It's still there. Just like even the holy Toms. You go to Vrindavan today and you look and you see, boy, this doesn't look like the spiritual world. You hear, listen, the Goswamis, when they describe Vrindavan, so what are they seeing there? Just beauty. Beautiful flowers. Everything is wonderful. Satchidananda Vigraha. It's all, the Dham is Krishna. What is that? Vrajesha Tanayastha Dhamma Vrindavanam. So Krishna's body is transcendental and his Dham is identical to him. So Tirthas also, they're holy places. But Maya, she puts a layer so we can't perceive it. So wherever the spiritual, the pure devotee has touched, he's purified the place, but temporary covering of Maya. But those with pure vision, they can see. Just like someone comes to the temple and they can't see, this is actually the spiritual world. We can't see it also, probably. But in some ways, we can. There's some perception. So that's a matter of purity, that one is able to pierce the covering of Maya and see the tirthas that are created in this world. Now, especially, of course, they're especially powerful tirthas where the Lord's pastimes are eternally going on. And we go to those places and even we try to experience them despite the coverings. And how do we do that? By all the things Prabhupada gave us. That's how we can reestablish them. Just like Lord Chaitanya went to Vrindavan, uncovered the holy places. So we can also uncover them in our hearts by following in his footsteps. Stitadi?
You were mentioning
Yeah, that's a nice analogy at least. That whatever, anything we do is a kind of yajna in one sense, and we may not be offering it to Krishna. In fact, we use the word sacrifice for anything that takes work. It takes a sacrifice of energy at least. You're offering your energy to accomplish that endeavor. So if you're trying to build a bridge and you mess up somehow in your calculations, yeah, you're not going to get the result. So that's a nice example that even, because you're dealing with the material energy in one, a lot of these, what is happening in sacrifice, there are manipulations of the material energy, but it's done in a subtle way. And of course, the subtle energy is very, very powerful. Just think of the energy of the mind. The mind is so amazing, actually, that it's able to accommodate so much. You can travel to the other side of the world in a moment with the mind. You can create a whole world, just like the whole world of fiction that have been written for thousands of years. People have created, or they create characters and practically bring them to life, the subtle energy. So that's so powerful. So if you do that, if you're doing that in sacrifice, then you get it wrong, then it can have really dire consequences. But in the material, on a more gross matter, when you're dealing with it, building a bridge or a skyscraper, there also can be bad consequences. But again, it's an idea. It's a nice example that if you do something not quite right, the material energy is going to react, and you're going to get a different result than what you wanted.
Madam Chief.